what we want tends to be what the customer wants. And that's quite powerful in our mind, because we're literally creating for ourselves. Like, we eat our product every single day.
We're back. Welcome back to season two of The Entrepreneur Experiment. I'm your host, Gary Fox. We made it to season two. Thank you to everyone who listened in season one. It really was a mad journey from March until December. We recorded 38 episodes in total and did one live event. In 2020, we are going to do three seasons, 10 episodes each, starting today. You're listening to episode one of season two of The Entrepreneur Experiment. So for the next 10 weeks, there'll be one episode going out every Thursday morning at 6 a.m. as usual, as listeners of season one will be sick of me reminding them. So it's every Thursday at 6 a.m. If you've never listened before, welcome. This is a weekly business podcast where I sit down with entrepreneurs and literally just discuss their journey. I chat about where they've come from, how they got there, the mistakes they've made, the great ideas they've had, and the things that make them successful. And we are starting season two with a bang. We have Luke and Evelyn from Simply Fit Food. This is just a great story. I love great backstories with entrepreneurs, and this is an absolute belter. I have never had a partnership on before who were both a partnership in their business life and a partnership in their private life. So they have a really, really good story. I won't ruin it too much. I'll just give you a quick overview of what you can look forward to. We talk about Dragon's Den, the secrets you don't actually hear about on the telly. We talk about the backstory, where their idea came from, and it's a genuinely interesting and different story. We talk about the pivot they made from their original business model into their current one, which is made out of pure necessity. And we talk about the pressures that brought them to that point. It's a very interesting story, but it's also a very honest story about how the guys got to where they are now, but also the realities of it. You know, Instagram entrepreneurs are very sexy and cool right now, and that's why I love doing this podcast, is to give people a very honest and, more importantly, a very practical guide to how to become entrepreneurs and also how to become better entrepreneurs. So for someone like myself, I learn so much from every single guest, and especially from Luke and Evelyn. So without further ado, here are the first guests on season two of The Entrepreneur Experiment. Enjoy. And if I hang around to the end, we have two books to give away this week. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us, Gary. Thank you.
So introduce yourselves, that horrible thing.
Well, I'm Evelyn.
I'm Luke.
And together we are. So we've been chatting a little bit before. So tell me the story of how you guys started, because it's a little bit different than most people I've been here.
Ah, okay. That's unusual. I always give this one to Luke because it's not my story to tell.
I hate telling it.
Luke, I'm so stressed
about that. Basically, it was about, we've run business now for about 4 years or so. So 4 years ago, I was diagnosed with a condition called Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome, which is basically an irregular heartbeat. That, you know, was very scary at the time in relation to like sudden adult death syndrome and all that. So that's the catalyst of the business, really. I had an operation on my heart, and then after that I wanted to eat healthy, and we kind of just seen, like, where we live in Drogheda at the time, there was no, like, say the likes of your Chopped or meal delivery companies or anything, so we just set one up and give it a go.
How did you discover you had that problem?
It was just, we came back from holidays and I was just starting to collapse. I was driving home one night and just kind of started to faint behind the wheel almost, so I had to go straight to A&E in the middle of the night. We managed to get home and Dad dropped me in, and I was just in a hospital then for like 3 months, and then eventually had the operation to clear it up. It's called an ablation, so but yeah, it was scary, not gonna lie, but
we weren't even that long going out, like we were 6 months in a relationship, so it was like not make or break, but you know, I didn't know the guy.
Do I ditch this deal for another one?
So I was just like, are you going to be all right?
He's a bit faulty.
Outside the warranty period.
But I'm actually thinking back now. I'm like, even the food, our relationship of food, even from when we were kind of early on going out, like I remember when Luke was in hospital and without being too, I suppose, bad about what I say in terms of hospital food. Everyone knows that hospital food isn't exactly...
It was the first thing that cropped into my head when Luke was talking about there, to be honest.
About hospital food? Yeah. All right, okay. Well, really interesting, because I literally, I don't even think I had my driving license, and I was driving from where I was from at that time, which was Skerries, that's where my family home is, and I was driving up to Dolores Hospital in Drogheda, which is where Luke was, and I remember I was on a learner permit, and I had like a packed lunch for him, and all the fruit chopped and like hummus made and you know, carrots cut, all this stuff, all this really healthy food, because I just didn't want him to eat the crap that he got in the hospital. And yeah, I just remembered, like, okay, Luke's really sick and he's eating this food, like, it's not going to make him any better. So it's funny, like, different things you think back to in relation to us starting out, it's nearly like a sequence.
It's bonkers, because where I live, there's a hospital across the road, and I actually go in there to walk the dog, and I can see into the canteen. I wouldn't take the dog in there to eat.
Yeah.
It's just bonkers how it's 2020.
It's disgraceful.
But when you're well, you want to eat well. It's when you're sick, why would you have fish fingers?
Yeah.
Like, it's just it's bananas. Yeah. Like, you see, there was a big thing on Twitter, I think last year, the year before. I think some chef was like, he was in hospital and he started tweeting out. It's in Ireland. He was tweeting out the photos of what he was getting.
Yeah.
And he was like, look, I'm sure it's extremely expensive to do this, but still, it does seem bonkers. So you're in hospital having your hummus and carrots.
Yeah.
And everyone else is like,
just avoiding the other food. Like, but, you know, fair play to the nurses, and everybody was great in the hospital, and you know, they can't fault them. They were great. The doctors they had were brilliant. I tell you, the hospital was great toast though. Tea and toast was great. I enjoyed
it's
that bit. But the rest
when you get anything done, isn't it?
Yeah, but the rest was terrible. So.
So that was like mid-2016. I was actually just about to submit my thesis when Luke went to get his heart operation.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we used to go for like walks on the beach and stuff, and Luke was from a family background of kind of entrepreneurs, and his dad would have owned a business and still owns it, and it was always in Luke when he always used to say, you know, I'd love to set up like a healthy kind of food fast food takeaway, that there's nothing like that in Drogheda, you know, at that stage. Businesses like Chopped hadn't kind of come that far, and you know, he was always looking out for that kind of thing. I'm usually kind of like, let's just do it then, instead of, you know, let's just bite the bullet and just go and do it, whereas you'd be a little bit more hesitant.
Cautious, yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah
So we kind of thought about it back and forth. I finished up college, I started a different job, and which I hated, and yeah, it got to September of that year, and we had gone on holidays the previous month. And we kind of talked about it jokingly. I don't think Luke thought like it was going to happen, but I was like, you know, we're just going to set up the social media and see what happens.
Yeah.
And yeah, it literally was just like a ball that just kept rolling then from the September 16. So we launched Simply Fit Food as an online meal delivery company online.
Mm.
We'd never, like, we're not techie people. You know, I'm not from a chef background, but I absolutely love to cook. So.
Okay, I was going to ask you where did that come from?
So that's how we thought, you know, we'll be fine. So yeah, the business kind of just started from September 16. And the biggest thing that happened in terms of like getting the name out there was Dragon's Den. So we were on Dragon's Den 6 months later, weren't we?
Yes.
6 months later?
Yeah.
So where are we now?
That was
start
17. So it was April 17.
Okay.
And it crashed the website because so many viewers went to the website. Our orders literally, obviously we're on voice so you can't see my finger, but it tripled.
Up and to the right.
It literally tripled overnight, and it stayed like that for like 4 months.
That's so interesting. What was the whole process like on Dragon's Den?
Oh, God.
It was cool.
You were crying
yourself. Going on, like, I was
imagine it's absolutely
terrifying.
Yeah. I love doing this. I love sitting down and chatting to people like one to one in a room with the door closed. But like, I can't imagine doing it. Like, and I fancy myself to do a lot. Like, I'd say it's daunting.
Yeah, I'd say the English one might be more so like daunting. But it was great. They were actually all nice, and the questions weren't too bad. I was just dreading getting it to like a terrible question and trying to do this figures in my head and not being able to get it out.
We've
in time
all
and,
seen that episode
where
like
that could have been us.
Poor Mary is up there and Mary's like, the profit is like 1 million euro.
Yeah.
Like, Mary, it's 10 grand.
Yeah.
That's what I meant, sorry. And yeah, they're gone.
Yeah.
Shot, and obviously it's TV, so they need a story.
Yeah.
You two can't just get up and smash it. And then it's too perfect. So what happened on Dragon's Den?
Well, I'm actually only thinking back, like, I think there's, I don't even think there's snippets, but they played it three times that year.
Wow.
And I remember we had it saved on Sky, so we looked at it the previous year and we looked so young compared to the way we look now.
That's business for you.
But like, yeah, we had prepared to go in and value our business and ridiculous, like it just over the top, extravagant.
We did it on purpose just because we didn't want an investor, because you know when you get invested that early, like they'll just, yeah, they really will take you for the ride. Like, so maybe they wouldn't, but we just didn't want it, like 25% of your business given away, like that's madness. So we overestimated and tried to just play dumb with it, like just to get the PR, just the free marketing was prime time on 9 o'clock on a Sunday. Like
it was great.
How was the whole process of applying and getting on? Because that's, no one really talks about that. Like, so what was that like?
You were dying of a flu. Do you remember that? It's
like, a common thread here, Luke, now.
Yeah, no, I'm just talking. Sorry.
We had three rounds to get through, and I think the last stage was like an interview or something. Remember? It was such, it's so long ago, it's a blur, but
it was in the written, that was an email application, then you had an interview with
two interviews,
people.
I think, yeah. But I remember you were really unwell that day.
No, it was called Christmas, wasn't it? And then we went on the TV.
On the filming day, you were feeling rotten.
No, it was fine that day. I was crying as well. Nervous,
we were a bit pale.
That's all.
Yeah.
How long does the whole thing take?
Full day.
Yeah. Between different edits and shoots, and you had to wait for other people to go on the TV, and there was maybe six people in front of you because they tried to do it all in one day in that particular episode or whatever.
Okay, yeah.
And you'd see people coming in and out and like their expressions on their face. We were last.
Yeah, we had to wait. That's right.
I remember there was one guy, I can't remember his business, but I remember he came out and he looked quite upset. And I returned him to Luke and I said, we still have time to get out of this if you want, you know? But hands down, the best thing we ever did.
Really?
Ever did. I could recommend it to a startup that had, at the time, zero funding.
Okay.
Best thing you've ever do, ever. Like, no amount of marketing.
People forget, like, I literally had this conversation with someone an hour ago. People forget how important traditional media is.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks, Facebook ads and Instagram and blah, blah, blah. But like, everyone still watches telly.
Yeah.
Everyone still watches, you know, and the important people watch telly.
Yeah.
The important media.
Mm.
So everyone reads the Irish Times, if you're a mover and a shaker, they're reading the Irish Times.
Yeah.
So what happened? The episode, so the whole day to shoot.
Yeah.
How long were you in there with the dragons?
An hour. Yeah.
Standing up there, yeah.
Yeah. It's actually funny because since then, at the time, I can't remember all the judges, but I know Alison Kayser and Gavin Duffy were two judges, and we had used them actually for quite a bit of mentoring after.
He's up that part of the world, isn't he?
Gavin is, I think he's up near where we're based. Yeah. And Alison Kayser has East Coast Bay Case, the factory.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like even to have them as contacts was really useful. And they gave us great guidance even after when the cameras turned off, didn't they?
Yeah, they were very good, yeah.
So, yeah, it was brilliant.
Good experience.
So they grill you for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then
they bring you out.
Yeah,
obviously,
I'm out.
Yeah, like we didn't get investment based on the evaluation that
we gave. Happily didn't.
But they painted us in a really good light and a promising light, because they don't do that with every business, depending on who you are.
You do look like an absolute stone sometimes.
So we were lucky that they were just a bit nicer about it.
Were you afraid of that though?
Yeah. It was a risk, like, you know, they could have just been like, were we 21 and 23? We were really young, like 4 or 5 years ago.
But all exposure is good exposure anyway, not unless it goes horribly wrong and you have the F off. Maybe that could even be good, you'd go viral or something, but like,
that's the mad thing about doing any of those shows, I suppose. You don't have control of where it might go, but I suppose, as you say, like, sure, look, you're on telly. Like, and are you guaranteed to be on? Do they say, that was good, you'll be on the show, or...
I don't remember. I think everyone.
Once you get through that stage, you might be like edited up or down, maybe.
Based on your pitching and the reactions of the judges, but once you got to that stage, you were guaranteed at least 6 minutes. I think we were on the TV for 9 minutes, and that's a lot.
That's a lot
of airtime. Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, between like the conversations back and forth, it was.
Love to get it now.
They're back. The UK one is still going, isn't it?
Do you remember actually when they do a post interview on Dragon's Den? So after you come out of the judging panel, Richard Curran, who we actually bumped into there, I think it was just before Christmas, and he kind of interviews you as to how the whole process went and how did you find it. Do you remember us sitting on the seat with the big bright light? And I turned around and I was like, they don't know what's coming to them. Like, wait until you see all this. What's your look?
You were full of courage.
Yeah. anyway, we're still sad.
We'll show them.
If they
care. So then it aired. How long after did it air?
We did it at Christmas, just before Christmas, and it aired the following April.
Okay.
So I was actually more nervous for it when we were on the TV and like we had like all our families over watching it. Vic was more nervous the day it was filming, and you were fine when it came out.
Yeah.
It's done this.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
It's gonna be what it's gonna be. Like,
I was just waiting to see all the reactions on social media, and then when
were
I
you
saw
straight it, on it, really.
Oh, like shit! Phone was buzzing, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah.
It was unreal, unbelievable. Like it was just great.
I don't know if I could. I think we're like, oh. Didn't like my glasses or something.
Just, no,
social's so cruel. Now.
There wasn't a bad comment, and I think really? yeah, there really wasn't. Like, and I just think if there was, and there could have been, I just like
wasn't
whatever.
The bad comments,
the good outweigh the bad.
Definitely.
So what happened when it aired? It spiked massively.
Oh yeah, like that was aired on a Sunday night. Was it? And we had basically orders in. Well, no one could place an order because the website crashed. Because we obviously weren't anticipating the volume.
Yeah.
And then when we had contacted our web developer to kind of help us out, whatever, the orders kind of started to come in. And then the whole week we were just flat out. And at that stage, we were only delivering in Leinster. So then we extended the platform to nationwide delivery as a result of Dragon's Den, because so many people were asking for it. And this was at a time where there wasn't that many companies like us out there.
I think people forget how quickly the scene has evolved.
Yeah.
We were talking about like Chopped and Fresh. And,
yeah.
It's amazing now. Like, it's great. Like, I was always like yourself. I was always like, jeez, there's nowhere to go. Like, you're going into a petrol station, you're getting like a banana.
Yeah.
And that's it. And you're like, oh Christ, or milk or something. It's, people forget how quickly the options have opened.
It's great. Yeah.
So when you guys were doing 2016, 2017, it was still pretty new, I'd say.
Definitely. Especially where we were up. Like, Dublin was the only place you could get your salads and stuff and falafel or whatever, like, up in Loud.
It's really strange up and down if we didn't ask for falafel in 2016.
I just think a lot people our age and older are a lot more health conscious now. I don't know whether social media is attributed to that, but just like the last, since we've been in the industry, like, it's popping up everywhere. And it's great. Like, the more kind of health focused businesses there is out there, the better, the bigger our market becomes.
Timing's everything. Like, you guys are just riding the wave at the right time.
Definitely.
So what happened then? So 2017, right, Dragon's Den, off we go.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we were producing all ourselves.
All ourselves, and we ended up taking on, I think we had
eight
staff at one stage.
Wow.
And,
when you said producing all yourself, you were actually in the kitchen cooking all
sometimes
the
meals. Sometimes, maybe, or in a van. Or
working two jobs.
I was doing two jobs and stuff, so.
You were still in your old job?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so. How were you balancing that?
It was very tough. We remember we were cooking some days for like 18, 19 hours, like just non-stop, like, and it was very difficult to manage. We never thought we'd go into food producing, like manufacturing. It wasn't something we just wanted to bring healthy food to people, give them the option. And we just got stuck in, but like there could have been an easier way, and eventually we found the easier way to do it.
Yeah.
Like, so.
So people were buying what, like meals for the week off, or buying all lunches, or what were people buying?
It was a plan, so you could order like your lunch and dinner for the week, or your just your lunch or just your dinner, and you'd be put it on a box for you, wrap it up, ice packs, the whole lot, the lot, and then we'd send it out through a courier, and then they distribute it to your house. So at the beginning, because we were small, before we got the courier, we used to deliver ourselves in kind of cooler boxes. But like we were cooking ourselves, like it was just crazy.
Like,
and then on top of that, we were trying to actually maintain a healthy lifestyle too, because that was
the
ethos of the brand. And slowly but surely, training went from like 6 days to three. Like, it was just, you know, healthy food I just didn't want to look at, because we were cooking the whole time.
I just want a burger.
Exactly. Like, all I wanted when we got home was like beans on toast.
It's stress.
So we were just like, what are we doing, you know? And our courier company didn't exactly help, because a lot of boxes kept busting, and from a business model perspective, we knew that it just wasn't sustainable.
Right.
So I don't like to say that our business failed, because we're still here, but the model that we originally had, we pivoted so quickly that we nearly didn't have time to actually think of it as a failure. It was just a massive learning curve.
Mm. So at what point were you guys like, we need to do something different here? Because I think that's every business owner has that, where you're like, shit.
October,
I think a lot of them don't pull out of that, though. They just
stay
in the fixed mindset of like, I'll just keep going and hope something happens. So was there a moment you're like,
in the office,
September.
Crying,
I think
you were. Yeah. Oh, thanks for that.
She was looking at you there saying, don't say the crying thing.
Gary, you can edit that out.
100%
staying in. Yeah, we were in the office and it was September 2018. I'll never forget. And I just said, I can't do this anymore. I literally would rather.
Two years in, exactly.
Yeah. And I remember like thinking, I have no quality of life. We have no relationship. Like, there's nothing here worth keeping. Unless we make a change. And I remember, as much as we didn't even like what we were doing at that stage. I hated it. Like, we were producing food for and making other people happy. And within ourselves, we weren't happy. Our original, our lives of like training well, eating well, you know, priority being family, like all of that had gone out the window because you put everything you could possibly imagine into the business. And yeah, I said to Luke, I was like, we either take a different route or we're gone. Because I can't keep doing this. And you agreed. You just needed me to say it, I think.
Yeah. I just would wait.
You would have gone along the way.
It was different like aspects of it. We were like renting different premises. We moved like 3 times in 1 year. Like every time they'd see us doing well, it would just go up our rent. And then you'd have some different chefs. And chefs, like some by nature, can be quite erratic as well. Like working them long hours and stuff and just walking out and arguments and stuff. And I was just like, this.
It's not
this
worth
is
it.
Very stressful. It's not. Yeah. It's not worth it. Like, we were aging rapidly. So
like, yeah. 2 years in, but I love hearing stories like that. But that's the stuff people don't really talk about. And that's why I started this podcast, is to have honest conversations with entrepreneurs. Because there's like a sexy, like entrepreneurship is so sexy right now. Everyone's being an entrepreneur, but people don't talk about those times where you're sitting in the office. Yeah. We're sitting in my old office now. I remember times sitting here on my own going, I just hate this. Mm. And I was maybe going to be here till 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I might just go meet a client, just like left him into an Airbnb at 3 a.m. He'd be like, this is just stupidity.
Mm.
So going to your head then, what happened? What was the conversation?
So at that time, we had trialed some of our meals in our local Super Value store up in Dundalk, a place called Super Value Fairways. And the manager there, you know, he said, you know, do you want to throw a few meals in here and see if it works? And our background is not retail. And obviously we were unsure about the whole margin expectation and not the whole lot.
So different business.
Yeah, exactly. And so we were very kind of unsure. But we said, okay, we'll give it a go because we're a loud-based business and we had a lot of traction up that area with deliveries to your door. So we put in 200 units and they sold out within a day. And we were like, whoa. Wow. And that was when they were in a foil tray. So now our branding, I'm pleased to say, has come on from then. But they were in a foil tray with a little sticker over them. And we kind of branded up a fridge. And yeah, we were just kind of like, wow, is there something here?
200 units, so 200 meals.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was just, that was probably a bit of the catalyst to the beginning of our retail journey.
Was that around the same time or was that overlapping?
That was March.
That happened in March and then we broke. That, you know, we had the kind of breakdown and we were like, oh, this is not working in, was it September, October? And then we made a plan for like 2 or 3 months then to figure our way out. So once we knew, we were like, that's it. And we gave ourselves a timeline. We need to get out of here, get out of this kitchen, just, you know, find a different route. So that's when we decided we'd outsource our production of any new products and just basically become product innovation, sales and marketing. That's our business now, really. Yeah. True retail channels.
Was that scary though?
Oh yeah, because it's the unknown, but we're lucky we don't have like a mortgage or children or anything yet, so that's why we could take the risk. You know, I think if I had them pressures, I'd be in a steady job where I just get paid.
Definitely. You know. Yeah.
And how did you handle that transition then? So you're in the office, you know, you're having that kind of heart to heart, like how did you manage that? Because I'd imagine there was a lot of moving parts.
We finished up in our production facility in the Christmas. So Christmas for any healthy business is slow anyway because people just naturally don't eat healthy food then. So we had actually got a period of like 6 weeks where we actually were producing nothing until that transition peeled over to us outsourcing with their new manufacturer and the meals being rolled out into Dunn stores. So like there was a period there where nothing was happening in the business and we were just, you know, biting our nails and just waiting for the January to begin. We were really anxious, but I always had in the back of my head, I was like, this will work, it'll be so much better. And obviously it has been so much better and there's been a huge amount of challenges, but I definitely would prefer the way it is now to the way it was.
Did you just want it to work or did you have evidence from Super Value going, do you know what, we've done this now, there's evidence there this is going to work? Or were you just willing into existence because you wanted it so bad?
I think it was blind self-belief, wasn't it? I think it was more than, more than that. Like, we weren't really case study people, or we didn't have the time to be putting out your focus groups and everything. So I think
there's a lot, well, I don't know, maybe there's not a lot, but I think people have a habit of focusing on, you know, like say with a product, you know, getting all your market research done, getting the best product you possibly can get to the market in the best possible packaging, and then putting it out there, having spent a huge amount of money, and then it failing. Mm. And you're going, well, I did my market research, yeah. I did the product development, blah, 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 blah. And you've wasted all this time, years maybe, on this one range that flops.
And the money.
Exactly. So in my eyes, I'm kind of like, well, we knew we were always good at cooking and, you know, coming up with recipes. Like, that's a real strong point for us. So flavor profile, product was not the issue. It was maybe not even packaging, not even branding, because we're creative in that sense too. It was more like, how do we get it from A to B, logistics, you know, how do we meet buyers? This was all new for us. Mm. That was the issue. But we said, just like that, let's just start the process and get it out there, because if not, we would have just still been nearly probably in the office today trying to figure out that route to market. So I nearly think it's, I don't know how much you agree with me, Luke, but I nearly think it's, you're better off just if you think you have a good product and you've tried it with family members and a few friends, you know, continue tweak it as you go along, you know, that being said, with a certain amount of different things. But if you have relatively a decent product, get it out there.
100% agree.
Suppose we were doing it for 2 years anyway, and our growth curve was always going up.
Yeah.
So if we could manage to just transition that to get the experts to actually manufacture it, because we're not experts in manufacturing, but we were experts coming up with our product and our own brand or whatever. So if we could just get them to do it, then it would be a lot easier, and we could push it and grow the volume, you know. So it's.
And how did you start that journey? You're still in the kitchen, obviously cooking. So how did you start the journey of, right, okay, we're going to outsource this?
March 2018.
How did we start it? Like,
the whole story. It seems like a big challenge. Like, you're literally stopping one and starting a whole different
product. We were doing them both at the same time. Mm. So when we were trying to find a manufacturer that would help take on the production of our meals, we were also trying to produce ourselves. So we ended up just sourcing a local company that were basically willing to give us a chance, and the relationship just developed from there. They were really keen on what we were doing, really interested in what we were doing. They were kind of not doing similar stuff, but they were in the fresh food space, and they wanted to extend what they were already doing for a retail perspective. And it kind of grew from there. I think from our perspective, it was just a real learning curve in terms of what it's like to deal with people at a retail level. And I think the experience that we've gained since we've started working with that manufacturer has just been literally like on the ground, you know, on the ground working stores, meeting buyers, meeting store managers. It's not been kind of reading from a manual, because we wouldn't have learned anything that way. It was literally just get out there, learn and apply back then as you need.
We've had a good few people on. I was looking back yesterday when I knew you guys were coming on. We've had a lot of people from the food and drink space on, and it seems like a tough space to crack into.
Very tough.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you had the foot in the door with Super Value, but how did you go, okay lads, actually we're going to crank this up now and we're going to give you 2,000 orders a day? Like, how did you get in with them, I suppose?
From the manufacturer point of view or the retail?
The retail point of view. So you found your manufacturer, you're like, okay, we're going to do this. How did you then go, right, we now need to ramp up? Because all your other customers were all direct consumers, so you had all these relationships with them. How did you get that relationship then with the retailers?
I think a lot of it was like self-belief, and you go back to kind of naivety as well. Like, we had this like roost in our head that we knew we were going to go with the product, and we also had this belief in terms of like what we wanted our product and our brand to represent that we didn't see out there in the market, and we still struggle to see sometimes today. There was no brand that had, you know, a real face to it, in our eyes, that was kind of, you know, available for customers who wanted maybe a meat option or a vegetarian or a vegan option. And we just kind of wanted to kind of, I suppose, represent people our age, and kind of show people that anybody can open a business if they really kind of put their mind to it.
To ramp it up, we kind of just went to the buyers, like say of Dunn Stores, Apple Green, Musgrave in the north of Ireland, and just got a meeting, presented our products to them, and like, lucky, like they just gave us a chance, and then the volumes just shot up.
Mm.
through the
that sound very simple, Luke.
It seems simple, like, but
it's really not.
There's a lot of negotiating.
I'd say that's extremely tough.
Yeah.
But even getting in front of those people must be hard.
It is, but they're like, if you're honest and you're genuine about your product, I think maybe they actually might be more, I don't know, tough. Like, sometimes you get real, like, you want to meet a retailer, like, and I've never had that feeling or scared. I think the bigger companies, because they know they can beat them up, we're only small. Like, at the time, what pleasure would they get out of destroying us? So some of them were actually keen to work with us because our ideas were really good and what they could see coming down the line of potential. So
I was going to ask you that. What made you, do you think, stand out from, was it the 2 years you had already, or was it just you guys, or what was, what do you think the secret sauce was that they were like,
Think retailers get sick and tired of seeing people coming in from companies trying to flog product that they don't really care about, or they don't have like a passion or a belief, or that it wasn't created themselves.
Okay.
We came in and we had developed exactly that product that they saw in front of them, and we had probably the history online from selling, and we had the sales, the pull through, etc, etc. We had our customer demographic nailed down.
We,
you know,
like, genuinely actually just wanted to get healthy food as an easy option for people. Like, it wasn't even like, the food business is not the business being, if you want to make loads of money and stuff, like, it's actually it's a really tough
business,
high volume, like, really quick turnover business. So like, when we just went in and we're just doing our best and trying to actually make a difference, I think
they understood,
like,
that
believed us, really, like,
you had a real right reason, not just a marketing message for them,
like. Not really, like, if it doesn't go well, we'd be very disappointed, like, you know, it's something that we're passionate about, and we went through a lot of hardship to get to where it was, so I think they could see that, you know.
Definitely.
So when you started, okay, you got your manufacturer and then you're starting to trickle into retail stores, what was the next step then to kind of ramp it up?
I suppose staying ahead of the curve. I think with retail, like, they're fairly ruthless and to be quick enough to kick you off the shelf if you're not performing well, or to
bring an own brand.
They'll just do their own version and not do it cheaper. Like, it's,
you see that all the time. How do you guys try stay ahead of that or combat that?
NPD, new product development, is our biggest asset. So anything that a retailer brings out is either already in Ireland and they're, you know, we're copying a brand that's already doing it because they know the sales rate as well. But the retailer will tend to not bring out a product that's own brand that isn't already out there, because they want to test the market using someone else, and if they fail, then they're like, oh, there's no point in us putting money into that. So I think NPD is a big thing for us, and plus we're our customer, so our customer demographic is 25 to kind of 35-40. They're the kind of young working professional, the first time parent, and we kind of ourselves fit in that age bracket. So what we want tends to be what the customer wants. And that's quite powerful in our mind, because we're literally creating for ourselves. Like, we eat our product every single day.
I'm looking at it here. Just describe it to people. So anyone that's not familiar with your kind of brand, so what are they?
So those are our new products. They're basically a plant-based vegan range of, so it's a versatile product. They're basically called power bowls. There's three different flavors: Thai veg, bean chili, and lentil dal. So the idea is that when I say versatile, you can either have it as a soup for lunch with bread or whatever when you're in the office, or you can use it as a meal, a complement, say, with your dinner. So if you wanted to make, I don't know, like a veggie stir fry, or veggie curry, for instance, our Thai veg, you just need to cook rice with it.
Okay, we had a curry last night, so
there you go. And if you want to add meat, you can add meat, no problem. It just means that the main part of the meal, all you need to do is heat it in the microwave for 3
minutes.
Smart,
yeah. I love the fact the calories per pouch as well.
Yeah, and they're really, really low. And the great thing is that we didn't use additives, preservatives, anything like that, and it's all 100% made in Ireland, and up to 80% of the ingredients are homegrown as well. So that was a really important aspect to that product.
The last couple of years has really been huge in that kind of, like, you know, calorie space, and then sourcing things local.
Yeah.
How have you guys kind of moved to the whole kind of, like, I don't mean to, like, air quote sustainability, but, like, people seem to be kind of baking that in after the fact now. So you guys seem to have kind of come in just under that trend.
We didn't really want to, like, so we learned a lot from our first range of products, in that obviously there was people commenting different things, you know, saying, you know, can you source more recyclable material, can you add less of this, more of that, whatever. And So that was a great reason as to why we first brought out those meals, so that for the next product we could tweak what we'd learned previously in retail. With this product, we wanted to keep as much of the ingredients as we could possibly find to the locality of where the product was being produced. So majority of those ingredients, aside from products that actually you can't grow in Ireland, like are grown in Louds, Meath, Monaghan. So
that's class.
Yeah, it's great.
I love that.
And we plan to just, I suppose, kind of highlight that message a little bit more when we go into the more of the harvest season. Mm. Right now, it's probably not the time of year, but we want to bring the farmers on board that are, you know, supplying us with their fruit and their veg. And I think it's something that's really important, like, because I suppose with the food industry in Ireland, a lot of products either are marketed for people to think that they're Irish or they may not be Irish. And we just want to kind of make it clear to people that you can have a perfectly good product that's manufactured and grown in Ireland, and there's less air miles. So
it's such a weird area.
Yeah.
You go into like your supermarket, you literally would need a PhD to read the back of it going,
what?
Packaged in Ireland?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Does that mean you flew it in or you just some lad threw it in a bag? It's a bonkers area.
Yeah. It's
it must very, be very hard to stand out, because there's so much rubbish of like, you see these symbols on of like, you know, made in Ireland, you know, packaged in Ireland. You know, a lot of it is very kind of kind of in and out. Do you know what I mean? A lot of it's very kind of is kind of unclear.
Mm.
So how do you guys make yourself stand out?
Our story would probably be the biggest thing, wouldn't it?
Possibly, yeah. The story, I think, is
Because it's personal. It's funny because every time we put up, like, say on social media, if we put up, you know, the background to our business, we always think people are sick of hearing it because we obviously live and breathe it every day. But say we do a post on social media, like we did one there like the other day about, because we you know, when you gain followers, people obviously don't know the origin of the business. And every now and again, we might remind people, and it just flies, you know, like it reached, like that post alone reached like 15,000 people on Facebook when we didn't even boost it. And it's just because people are genuinely interested in how a business develops and why a business develops. And to be fair, there's not a lot of people our age who have managed to stay in business and are still there.
that's probably the most that's probably the most honest thing as well. But that's definitely the story.
Yeah.
Especially you guys, the two of you together. I was telling people that you guys were coming on. It's a great story.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a really good team. You've got a good background. Like, there's so many brands.
Mm.
It's like you go into a shop and there's so many brands now. Like, but like, we had the founder of Mad Egg on there a few months ago, and they do a really good story of telling their story of the ingredients, because they care.
Brilliant. Yeah.
They really care, and they're this. Our chickens come from Pat, and Pat is this guy, and he's a real face, and they have them on his social media, and it's not just. You can always kind of tell when it's bolted on. You see the unhappy farmer standing in the bags, and you're like, I'm not sure if that's really where it's coming from.
Yeah.
You know, especially you buy some food nowadays, like fruit and veg and stuff, and it's like, oh, product of Guatemala. And then you might bang it in the fridge, and it's still grand two or three weeks later, and you're kind of going,
that's something
that should be still okay, should it?
Yeah, that opened my eyes when we started like outsourcing to realise, I used to think you pick up fruit or something just like that, or a bag of rocket, and you realise that's healthy, nothing wrong with that. But when you see it, different places that we've been into, because we had to tender for our stuff, so we went to the most kind of wholesome manufacturer we could, and like a good, like a family atmosphere. But when you see, like, say rocket and lettuce going through like chlorine and stuff and all to be washed and stuff, and like the chemicals and stuff being sprayed onto things, like, it's just it's mad.
I think that's going to be huge in the next couple of years. I think that's going to be a massive opportunity for businesses like yourself,
because
I think people, you can see it already, that people are like going, what am I eating?
I think the process should be put somewhere, or you can scan it and see how the process that would be a good idea.
I think the traceability thing, while it's been there for years at Meat and stuff, I think people are getting far more wiser to stuff, where it's coming from. How, like, you do, like, you buy fruit and veg and you look at it and you're like, Jesus, that's come like all across the world. How is that able to be sold for 60
We're actually gonna my house, we've been land there, we're gonna do a polytunnel ourselves, so we can just like a big one, so
that's
have
good.
To just from the ground to the plate. And if I could, I'd have chickens and everything, so like good for like fresh eggs and stuff.
We moved into a house there in October, and they left the big chicken house, chicken hut. But it's a proper big one with like the fence and everything. And my missus just looked at me and was like,
No, you're not.
Before, I can see it in your eyes. Yeah. I can see what you're thinking. Stop. It's still there. So I think we have a little pup. I don't know how much he'd like the chickens, but like, same. I'd love to. I'd love to, because like, it's literally like 6 feet away.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing. Like, I think that's going to become massive. More popular as well.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, people growing their own, like, you know, fruit and veg, but obviously like veg and stuff and mint and stuff like that. That all sounds like a lovely story. What was the biggest mistake you guys made?
The biggest,
because like, apart from like the big kind of like pivot you guys had, you know, what's the biggest thing you're like, oh Jesus, you really messed that up there?
See, the way I look at those is, I don't really look at mistakes as like mistakes. I kind of look at them as,
what was
like
the biggest learning experience you had then?
The reason why I say that is because any mistakes we've made, we haven't really done again.
That's the definition, exactly.
You know, so it's like, it's not a bad thing, because I think if we never made a mistake, Jesus.
You'd make nothing.
Exactly. Yeah.
How naive we were when we started actually going into the outsourcing type of thing as well. Like, you have to negotiate with your actual manufacturer and your retailer. Well, we kind of forgot you had to negotiate your manufacturer. And sometimes that can be
I think there's a beauty in that naivety as well. You nearly need that, I think.
Yeah.
You nearly need to be either, as you say, like just absolute belief.
Yeah. Managing relationships, I think, with different types of people along the food chain as such has been, I think, our biggest learning curve. In that you the relationship that you might have with person A is completely different to person B. So like your retailer, our relationships with all of our retailers are really, really positive, because they understand us, they understand why we're here, they understand the message that we're trying to bring. But sometimes when you're trying to negotiate further down the chain, in terms of when you're producing a product, when you're sourcing a product, whatever, you know, you have to use a lot of different negotiation tactics, which we've learned kind of over the last 3 years and been able to apply them. Whereas if we didn't have that experience from, you know, when we were working in the kitchen or we were trying to sell into local stores, like, we wouldn't know what to do. So I think the biggest, I wouldn't call them mistakes, but like, I suppose putting money in places that maybe it wasn't really necessary.
Yeah, like, but we never blew like lots of money. Like, never blew mad money on anything really. Like, but it's just, you look back and say, oh, I probably should have done that differently. Like, there's lots of them situations, like, because I could have done that a little bit better, but like, there's nothing really that stands out too bad.
No.
Maybe like with the courier company, like, persisting with that for so long.
Yeah.
When you were an online delivery company, that's very tough. Like,
I think if we look back, we probably should have gone straight into, in hindsight, instead of going into an online business, because we weren't tech people, and like, your store is your virtual, you're the virtual store, you know, and we weren't tech people, so we relied a lot on web developers. We probably, in essence, should have gone straight into retail. But in saying that, the online business for 2 years was literally our catalyst to our retail business, and was a way for us to gain our customer base and build that channel. So there's two and two there, you know. I could say we should have gone straight in, but then again, it was kind of the learning.
The journey, all the journey. Yeah. Like, you might have gone straight in, and you might have got delisted after 2 weeks.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
the story. Yeah. What's it like working together?
Oh, I've been dying to ask this question. I'm going to let Luke answer that.
Torture. I should have done this separately. I should have left the booth.
Quarantine.
It's very tough. Like, it is tough. There's no point in saying it's great and it's roses. Like, it is really, really difficult. It was more difficult when we used to live apart. We live together now. Like, but then it was also when we only started, we're living together like a year now, and at the start it was like we were just constantly having one big business meeting. It's great for the business will go up, because it's just constantly at it, like, constantly working at it.
So, that's how I would imagine it.
Just finding the separation. So then we said, right, we need to get an office. So we got an office in the mill, and like, we have separate, like, we can work separately, you know.
So what you really mean to say is we got separate offices. That was the key.
Luke's very much like, you know, I need to concentrate, like, nobody come near me.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm like, everybody come at me with your problems and we'll have a chat, you know.
But isn't that, but it's just probably the beauty of it too, though.
Yeah, it's two different personalities.
I think so, maybe.
But yeah.
Well, if you say it is, that's what it is.
No, it's we're like chalk and cheese is the term. We're completely different in personality, but that's why I think it works, because as you can tell, I'm the chatterbox. Luke's more, you know, the numbers, the business, the important stuff.
Okay.
I'm the fluffy stuff, like, you know.
And do you think that's why it works?
I definitely do.
Think so, yeah.
We're not in the same, like, what I do is different to what Luke does. It complements each other. I'm MPD on the creative side, Luke is the business side, the logistics, the distribution, the margins, all that stuff. You ask me any of that and it'll go over my head. I just usually point to Luke. So yeah, like, that's why I think we complement each other, because our focus in the business is two separate areas, or four. Whichever way you want to look at it.
How do you stop the business meeting at like 5 o'clock?
Exhausted.
Yeah.
I think we just go training, isn't it?
Yeah, we
like,
love
I just
training.
Go like running, or we're part of a running club and we're in different groups and stuff, or I go to the gym or kickboxing or something, and a bit of separation and exercise and just calms you down. And then,
yeah.
You know, just that bit of headspace, I think.
Definitely. Or my thing is like, go home after training, and I love to cook, believe it or not, because we're not producing anymore.
You're back in love with it now.
I love cooking. I used to hate it because all we did was cook 6 days a week, but like, I absolutely love to cook now. It's my kind of headspace after training, which I just don't like to clean up. Luke looks after that. Yeah, but that's
those
little things. Yeah. Yeah, and then just taking time out the weekend to not work. We try as much apart from every now and again when you're really busy or you have the odd event. We really are not those people who are like grafting from the minute I wake up to
24/7, 365.
Yeah,
you see that as well online. Yeah, yeah.
It's not. It's well for us. No, that's bullshit. Sorry.
You can't though.
Yeah, you need
just
a break.
Burn out.
Yeah.
You do that. Well, you guys said it there yourselves. First 2 years, burn out.
Definitely.
You can only do it for so long.
Yeah.
So, do you guys have a strategy, or do you just? Because I dig into this a lot with people, because I think it's one area. It's very hard. Especially when you're on your own, but I'd say also when you're in a couple, that, you know, how do you just switch it off? Like, how do you just, because you have all this stuff just whirling around in your head.
We have you kind of started, remember, every 8 weeks or so we like to go somewhere, whether it's in Ireland or
for... So yeah, 3 months or so, we book somewhere, we go for a break, and like, even when we're away, we'll probably go into, if it's abroad, like Lisbon or whatever, we'll go into a few supermarkets and we'll be looking to see what's, or London, well, London's more work, but
yeah,
when we go on proper holidays, like every like 3 months, even if it's just in Ireland, to get the break.
Yeah,
I like that.
Recharge the batteries.
Yeah, so in March we're going to Tralee, we're doing a half marathon on the Saturday, then we're heading down to Dingle for a couple of days.
Yeah,
Dingle, spectacular.
Yeah, we were only there like in November, we said just go back again because it was good crack.
It's lovely. It's so far away, but it's so good.
Yeah,
it's really nice. Funny too though, because when we're out of the office, like we actually don't talk about work, believe it or not. Like when we're away on holidays, it tends to be, unless we're really excited about the conversation, like the last thing on our mind. Like we actually do.
It's much more relaxed if we are talking about saying, that's a good idea. That's like,
I get
very
you.
Much.
It's not in a pressurized situation.
Yeah. Is that experience too though? You guys are more experienced now. You've kind of.
Yes. Because before, when we didn't live together, at the weekends we'd be like, you know, at the weekend we have to do this, have to do that, meetings here, meetings there,
on
a Sunday night
all over each other,
and you'd be going away and going, Jesus Christ,
if she says that thing with the package one more time.
So it's all experience.
But I like hearing strategies of like, oh, we just go every 3 months.
Yeah,
so you have to have, I think you have to have things to, if things look forward to.
Yeah, definitely.
Simple as that.
Like, you need to have a life outside of work, like, you know.
Yeah.
Simply for food is obviously our baby, but it's not the be all and end all for us, you know. There's more things to life. Like, we really prioritize family. Like, you know, there's nothing more important than that to us. It's not really all about making money and whatever, you know. For us, Simply for Food was, we started it as, you know, there was a reason behind it, and we still pursue that reason, but there's definitely more important things in life than working like a crazy person.
How do you guys kind of plan your kind of week and quarter? Like, do you sit down together, or do you have individual goals, or how do you plan that out?
We are doing everything at the moment, because we're still at that stage where we're scaling so fast that we're not quite ready to hand over the reins on a number of different things. So, like, obviously we try and plan as much as we can, but because we're still in that kind of rapidly growing startup phase, we're still, you know, kind of running around, but we're also kind of focused on what we need to do, like, individually. We might have a meeting once a week, but, being self-employed and working at that kind of level of scale, it's very hard to plan and predict when things get in the way and you have to get them done.
Yeah, we have like our kind of goal for like every 3 months, and then
every year,
and each week is just completely different. That's why I love it, like, because it's, I kind of don't like being doing the same thing every day. So once there's something different, like this week we have like 4 or 5 meetings, like, and just like, then I'm, you could be taking orders, you're trying to get new sales, you're trying to negotiate with someone, you're trying to worry about your next batch of packaging if we need to change something, or just constantly there's
something different.
There's always something to do, like, and it's good complaint, like, you know.
Definitely.
So. And how do you come up with new ideas? I suppose I'll direct this to yourself, but like, you know, so okay, you just launched a brand new product. So where does that come from? Is that everywhere?
I'm gonna give my mom a shout out. Okay, so kind of flavor profile wise, ingredient wise, all that kind of thing. That's probably my real love for the business, in terms of like putting a recipe together and really making it not different, but just, you know, adding something maybe that's quirkier than what's already out there. So my family would have always grown up on a diet that wouldn't necessarily have been an Irish diet, as in, like, you know, your lasagnas, and although they're all delicious, we wouldn't have been used to maybe a lot of meat, or as in, for example, when we bring friends over on a Friday after school when we were kids, usually most houses you get like chips and nuggets or pizza. Like, my mom would be there making like lentil dals, Moroccan couscous stew.
I see that,
like,
got some luck back.
Yeah,
in the day.
Like, my friends
not gonna hurt us again.
Just, I remember one friend came over and she was like, "Is that a raisin in my salad?" And I was just mortified. Like, but at the same time, I grew up with thinking that that was normal, which it was, and the food was so healthy.
It would be now.
Yeah,
but like, I can't.
My mom was a little
bit
ahead of her time, because a number of
food hipster
reasons. Yeah, literally, she lived in London and she just, I don't know, she just came back with all these different ideas. But yeah,
she was very far ahead of trends.
Yeah, like, massively, and she still is, like. But yeah, like, from a cooking perspective, mom's always been amazing when it comes to kind of creations in the kitchen, and I think that has then stemmed onto my sister, you know. And she just really, like, loves to try all new recipes in the kitchen, and she's like me, she loves feedback. So she'd be handed a plate of food to Luke, "Well, Luke, did you like it?" You know,
it's nice, isn't it? Very nice. Yummy.
So my mom has actually been fully plant-based since last just over a year.
Okay.
And she has found that incredibly easy, because, like I said, we never really had meat in our diet. And, you know, so from the perspective of designing those products, although they're plant-based and they're vegan, we don't shout about it too much because not everybody is into that. But, you know, if you want to dabble, that's perfect. But I think from a flavor profile perspective, my mum has kind of, like, I suppose, empowered me with the tools to kind of say, like, you can team, like, you know, raisins in a couscous. You can do all these quirky things and it still will taste nice.
Yeah.
So from an experimental point of view, she has definitely been a real asset in that. And I think just creating different recipes has definitely come from my mum.
Okay.
Definitely.
It's so funny how both of your backgrounds have somehow merged to create the business. Like, Luke's entrepreneurial background and yourself with the food.
Well, believe it or not, though, my mum told me recently that both my grandparents, well, one of my grandparents in particular, my granddad, he actually used to make his own honey, and he would sell that to Super Quince.
Wow.
I didn't realise.
That's class.
And I only realised that recently. So maybe there was something in the blood, but definitely it was Luke.
It's funny, though. It does. You pick it up by osmosis.
Yeah.
So what is going to happen with Simply Fit Food now in the next couple of years? Where are you guys going to be?
Everywhere, hopefully.
That felt like an interview question. Sorry about that. That's a very lazy question. But what's your goals? Like, where, right. if we could go, all right, this is our dream.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's just to do our best in Ireland first and not get ahead of ourselves, and see if we can flood the market with what we have, and if the market takes it. And, you know, we are in talks in England as well with some of the big retailers. At the minute, we're flying over there in a week or two. Was it 4th February or something?
Yeah, 4th February.
Something like, and so England will probably be the next. We were kind of hesitant with Brexit and stuff, so we'll see how that goes. But, like, because we don't manufacture our products ourselves physically, we know we can just get it manufactured over there and just roll it out over there.
Yeah.
So that would be the next step, from Ireland, England, and then it to Europe maybe, or America.
But definitely saturate the market here first while the customer base is here primarily. But definitely, like, we... you know, this is a scalable brand, and the fact that our kind of brand itself has the ability to go into so many different areas within the fresh food space. So whether it's a soup product like that, whether it's our meals, whether it's a breakfast option, a snack option,
yeah,
there's a number of different areas that we're looking
at. How many products do you guys have? Sorry, that's what I was actually thinking about. My brain just like melted down there when I was looking at the packaging. I can't multitask. How many products do you have?
So we've got in the meal range, which is meat based, there's four different flavors of meals, and then with the pouch plant based meals, there's three different flavors.
Okay,
so
you're well up there already. You've got seven offerings.
Yeah,
I did that all myself.
We did not use a calculator.
So what? The UK. I mean, the UK is a no-brainer, isn't it, for you guys?
Yeah, hopefully we'll see how it goes. Now it's just early days. Don't
we forget how like insular we are here? Like I was in Illinois just before Christmas. You're like, my God. Like, you should literally have to be mandatory to fly over there.
Yeah.
Like, once every couple of months to just get the scale of the place. Yeah. It's just mind-blowing.
It's crazy.
Like Ireland's Manchester's or something like
that. Yeah, I always... someone told me that stat, and I always think back and I go, just remember that.
Yeah. Mm. And when you get, like, sometimes listed, saying, or not... Yeah, like, some of the Eurospars or Super Values or whatever, like, you actually have to walk in and sell to each manager. And some of the, like Dunn's is different, or Tesco, you're on in the shops no matter what. You don't have to go into manager, so it's a bit more parochial. But in England, like, I mean, or in the UK, when you're listed, you're in 500 stores and that's it. Like,
that's where you're going to be though, isn't it? Like, you know, do it once and then it's done 500 times.
So it's a bit it's more
where
simple.
The volume is. And I suppose look at the customer profile that lives, say, in the likes of London. Like, it's our demographic of customer that buys here.
Absolutely.
And there's millions of them over there. So it's just like, it's like a gold mine.
We've great customers in Ireland too, though. We seem to be doing very well. We've gone from 1,000 products or meals, whatever, a week, to it's gone up to like 8 or 9 because it's spiraled up. So it's good.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's all trending upwards.
Definitely. Like, I think the biggest thing is just to not jump too quickly, because then you can risk losing it all. And that
how do you think about managing that risk? Because I think all entrepreneurs have that. Like, the great entrepreneurs are calculated risk takers.
Mm.
There's this like mad notion of like entrepreneurs being just lunatics, just running around the place, just taking crazy risks. But like, they're all good calculated risks. So how do you guys calculate your risk?
I'll be honest, I don't.
Is this guy for that?
Like, if Luke wasn't there to rein me in, I'd be like, we're going to London tomorrow. Luke's more like, so no, we can't do this for X, Y, and Z reason. And I'm like, okay,
That makes sense.
Can't just jump over there, you know? So,
but you need that, though. You need the pull and the push.
Yin and yang. You definitely need both. Definitely. Yeah.
So, what would you guys like to be doing kind of in 12 months when you see the brand? Where would you like to be? Would you like to be in the UK, or would you like to just have cracked Ireland?
I'll say cracked Ireland. She'll say be in the UK and flooded in the UK. Enough. So I think that's both answers there, is it really? But
let's say fully cracked Ireland and in the UK.
Okay. Bit of both.
That's a bit of both.
The vegan, I was interested to hear you guys have still the meat option. The veganism, I won't call it a trend because I'll get hate mail.
Mm.
Do you think that is something that blew up and is now receding, or do you think that's just how people are going to live now? Because it's still quite a tiny part of the market. It was such a hot topic, and the Game Changers thing came out and everyone's talking about it, and then it just...
We could get into a very heated debate about this, couldn't we?
I just think it's great that people are more educated on food and like the process and what's actually in, and they're reading the back of packs. I think it's brilliant. It's brilliant for us. Like, you know, I don't understand how someone can eat something. It's like a year, 2 years shelf life, or even 6 months, you're like, hey, like, that's, it's not natural. I wouldn't eat it, like, you know. So
I don't like to see is people who say they're vegan but they just eat processed vegan food. Like, that's not good for you. I prefer, if people are trying to be vegan, to eat more kind of whole foods, meaning like what we talked about earlier, like, you know, proper vegetables, proper fruit, not something that's been kind of obliterated into nothing, and you know, you've lost what it's coming from. But that's just a personal opinion.
I think that's just good advice for your health.
I think that's I think it's common
sense.
Whether
you're vegan,
like,
vegetarian, meat eater, whatever.
Yeah.
Moderation.
Relatively fresh.
Yeah, definitely.
As you say, like something sitting on a thing for 6 months. It's just, it gets a really heated.
Yeah, I know.
People get super You're either one or the other.
Yeah.
You're with us or against us.
No.
I'm not a fan either. I don't really care what people eat. Whatever you want. I'll eat.
Personal
knock
choice.
Yourself out. What was your thoughts on the Game Changer?
I'm actually fully plant-based, okay. And that's only from the beginning of this year, but I always ate less meat anyway, so it has not been an issue for me, and my mum, like I said, has always helped me. So from that perspective, and it's one of the books I'm going to recommend at the end of the show as well, it kind of relates into all that, I kind of took it with a pinch of salt.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that was like some of the kind of scientific experiments that they used, and
they were bonkers.
They
were absolutely, it was so well made, it was so sexy, and there's loads of famous people, but I think it was Dominic Munley, he runs a CrossFit gym at Sandyford, he was on Today FM talking about it, he made a really good point. It was advertised at men. It was for bros. It was like trying to get men into plant-based diet. You look back at it like you're like, all the muscly dudes in the gym and
Well, I suppose that's because of the perception that, men have to eat like a million chicken breasts to gain any muscle or whatever.
But like,
whatever.
It didn't say that them guys that were the weightlifting, whatever body, were like that they're injecting steroids into themselves, which is pretty fucking obvious.
Who was it you were listening to? Joe Rogan's podcast, and he interviewed...
I didn't actually finish that podcast, but like that's like they're not saying that aspect of it. It was very... I wouldn't read too much into it.
It was so glamorized. Yeah. It was like, I think it's good. Anything that brings a debate about people eating better is good. Definitely. But I just thought it was so skewed.
I also think...
The scientific experiments.
Yeah, no.
For the lads to eat a vegetarian burrito.
No.
Come on.
I also think you kind of have to be careful because we come from a country that meat on your plate is such a traditional thing for a lot of families. Like, cooking meat is a tradition in people's families, and like, you can disrespect that as well by saying you need to eat vegan or you need to eat plant-based. Like, some people take massive offense to that, and I totally get that. And also look at the hundreds and thousands of farmers in Ireland, like that's their livelihood. And
protest this week.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to be kind of conscious of the fact that it's everybody's choice, but if you push, like, it's like anything, pushing something in someone's face, people are just going to tell you to F off, you know? It's like, allow yourself to make an informed decision on it, and then it's your choice as to whether you want to do it or not. Don't be pushing it in people's faces, because everyone has the right to make that decision on their own. That's what I think anyway, but
I couldn't see myself giving up meat now. I don't know about you, but I've cut down a bit, but like, I don't like
I'd be sick. I was trying to suss the ground here before I admitted. I'd be sick. But again, more balance. I've only noticed in the last kind of like 12 months, kind of 18 months, get more balance.
Yeah.
I think it's something as you get a bit older, so you start thinking about more about what's on your plate. It's not just all about I'm hungry.
Yeah.
You do start to think a little bit more, and you've a bit more time to cook and stuff like that. But it's just common sense, isn't it?
But the key to any, if you're kind of giving up meat or you're reducing your meat intake, the key to cook, if you're cooking a lot from scratch and not using meat, is flavour. It has to be tasty.
Can't be punishment.
Or you're not
Thursday night's our veg night. Yeah. You're going to enjoy it.
You have to enjoy your food, so I definitely think flavour your food. If you're not going to eat meat, like, make it exciting, There's no reason,
people listening to this just shaking their head going,
I just love to cook, sorry guys.
Okay, almost at the end. What book would you guys recommend we give away? So all people have to do to enter is to tag yourselves on your social handles and tag me. So what book would you recommend?
Well, we have two different choices.
We'll do a double giveaway then. That's actually unfair. We do a double giveaway.
Go ahead.
Well, my book is called Hey Not to Die.
I have that on my shelf now. I bought it. I heard so much about it.
Yeah.
Bought it, and it's on my to-do list.
So freaking good.
Really?
It's amazing. I like it because it's science-based and it's based on fact. It's not based on people giving their opinions about things. Like, you can't argue about it. So the author is a doctor in food plant-based nutrition, Dr. Michael Greger, and he is basically delves into every sort of dietary problem or every sort of cancer or illness that people have and the causes of it, and it's just fascinating. You can read it piece by piece. So like, one thing I found really interesting was that I've got family history. My grandmother has Alzheimer's, and I was always really fascinated as to how does it happen, how does it begin, you know, all that kind of thing. And I just went straight to the chapter, and like I read all about the I suppose the tests and the studies that were carried out on people who had Alzheimer's over the last 100 years. Okay. And it was just fascinating in terms of like what they found, ways they can reduce it, you know, ways your diet can help prevent it, stuff like that. So from a foodie perspective, I just found it really, really interesting. So yeah,
it just makes sense though. Like all this stuff that happens to people, you know, we put so much food into our body every day.
Yeah,
it just makes sense that a lot of stuff
to give. Yeah,
that comes out of it has to come from your food.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, that's a great recommendation. How not to die. Very cheerful one to kick off the new season.
Sorry.
Luke, bring us back with something happy.
Oh, I don't know. It's just what I'm reading at the minute. It's just Tyson Fury's book, The Man Behind the Mask.
Yes, actually, is it good?
Yeah, it's quite good. It's just on the mental health aspect. The way I read it was really good. So, yeah, I thought that was really
He's a fascinating character.
Yeah, he's amazing. So, the way where he came back from like the brink of suicide or something, that was brilliant. Really good, so.
So Tyson Fury, Man Behind the Mask, is it?
Yeah, I think that's called. Just yeah, Tyson Fury's book.
Yeah, we'll give away both of those. So just tag you guys. So what is your handle?
On Instagram, it's simply_fitfood.
Okay.
On Facebook, it's simplyfitfood1, I think.
Okay, so if people just Google simply fit food,
it'll come up.
Perfect. What's your website?
www.simplyfitfood.com.
Perfect. Great. So all people do to win a copy is to tag yourselves, Simply Fit Food, and myself. Guys, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
And that is a wrap on episode 1 of season 2. Thank you so much for listening, especially if you made it the whole way through. Thank you very much. If you want to win a copy of either of those books that we talked about, the Tyson Fury book and the How Not to Die book, simply tag Simply Fit Food and me, Mr. Gary Fox, on any of the socials. So you can do it on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, wherever you like. Just tag both of us and share this episode to be in a chance to win. I will see you back next Thursday at 6 a.m.